Live Creative Now, episode 31.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hey, brilliant. This is Live Creative Now, the podcast designed to help you live a full color life. Whether you think of yourself as not artistic, not creative, or you think of yourself as an artist of any kind, or anything in between, the truth is that no matter how you define yourself, feeding your creative hungers makes you feel more alive. And it's how you change the world. I am Melissa Dinwiddie, passion pluralite artist, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, here to address all your questions about living a full color creative life. Before we get to today's episode, first, a heads up. On Monday, I'm running a 24-hour sale, Monday, November 30th. I'll be offering never-before-seen specials on paintings, my Erase the Chaos toolkit, and a limited number of coaching packages and consulting spots as well. So if you want to get access to that sale, it's only going to be available to people on my mailing list. So you can sign up right now at livecreativenow.com. And then once you sign up, watch your inbox for an email on Monday morning to access the savings. And now on with today's episode. Most creators I talk to, especially if they're in the more sort of beginning stages of exploring their creativity, most are obsessed with the concept of voice or personal style. How do you find it? How do you cultivate it so that it's really distinctive and truly yours? That it's not, you know, copying somebody else, that it's really your own. I have offered thoughts on this subject in a previous episode, episode 16, but today I want to talk about a surprising way to find your voice that I didn't touch on in that episode. But first, let's take a little brief trip back in time, back to the 1980s, when I was a teenager. Trust me, it will all be relevant. It will become clear very soon. When I was 16, I took my first jazz dance class, modern jazz, and I have to insert a little tangent here that jazz dance is really a misnomer. If you are familiar with the jazz musical genre, which is vast and incorporates so many different styles of music underneath that big umbrella, jazz music is always improvisational. It always has an improvisational element, I should say. And that is not true with jazz dance. I don't know why it got the name jazz dance, but it did. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. I just had to insert that. When I was 16, I took my first jazz dance class at a private studio in my hometown of Palo Alto, California, and I fell so in love with this style of dance. It's really sexy, and there's all these isolations of different body parts, like rolling the hips or rolling the rib cage or rolling just one shoulder. There's a lot of turned in knees and feet. And of course, I can't forget jazz hands, right? When your fingers are splayed out really wide and your palms are facing the audience. I'm doing jazz hands right now. So this was the style of dance that was commonly seen in like Broadway musicals, and also in the music videos that were just starting to appear on television back then. And I was a teenager, so of course I was obsessed with with music videos. And of course, if you remember the 80s, if you're old enough, jazz was also the kind of dance performed by the Solid Gold dancers. If you know who the Solid Gold dancers are, then we are probably of a similar vintage. Anyway, jazz dance is very influenced by ballet and modern dance, and also vernacular dance and the social dance forms that were popular at the time when it was being developed. But perhaps the most influential individual figure in the field of jazz dance in the 20th century was Bob Fosse. Now, if you have ever seen the film All That Jazz, that is really a fictionalized portrayal of Bob Fosse's life. If you have ever wondered where jazz hands came from, you can credit Bob Fosse. He was also responsible for the turned in knees and toes and those hip and shoulder rolls. And his dances also often featured the use of props like bowler hats and gloves and canes and chairs, and also women often in fishnet stockings. So this man was a real innovator. And he had a really distinct style. It was a completely original voice at the time that you can look at now and just see Fosse. Any modern dance that incorporates those elements, that is Fosse. So where did he come up with all of these really creative stylistic innovations? Well, it's not where you might expect. His style didn't appear out of thin air. In fact, it was born out of the gap between his limits and the existing canon of dance. So, for example, the turned in knees and toes, those came about because Bob Fosse was compensating for his own lack of turnout. Turnout is the term in the dance world for outward rotation of the leg when you turn your hip and your knee and your foot out so that your toes are pointing to the side rather than forward. And the reason that turnout came about is it's really foundational to ballet because it allows you to raise your leg higher, especially on the side and in the back. So it's very desirable in a classical dancer, and I mean, it's essential. But Fosse's legs didn't turn out. He had a lousy turnout. In fact, his legs kind of turned in. He was pigeon-toed, but he didn't let that stop him. Instead of trying to fix this flaw, he exaggerated it in his choreography. And that's where that very distinctive turned in look came from. Rather than struggling to fit himself into the existing ideal, which was turned out, he'd never be able to do that well, right? He'd only ever be able to do that poorly. Instead, he focused on his perceived weakness and he turned it into a strength. And that wasn't the only place where he did that either. He lost his hair pretty young and he was very self-conscious about that. And his biographer, Martin Gottfried, writes that his baldness was the reason that he wore hats and was doubtless why he put hats on his dancers as well. And similarly, he did not like his hands and that's why he used gloves in his performances. Very interesting. So basically, instead of fighting that gap between what he was capable of, what he liked or didn't like about himself, and, you know, the ideal, instead of fighting that or running from it, he mined it. And it led him to create a totally unique style that ended up completely rocking the dance world for generations. You can still see Fosse's influence everywhere in the dance world. Now, Bob Fosse is not the only creator who found his unique voice by mining his gaps. One of my favorite examples is a calligrapher named Karl Rohrs. He's one of my favorite calligraphers and favorite teachers of calligraphy. And he has a really quirky signature style that just screams Karl Rohrs. Nobody else works like him. He's originally trained as a sign painter, and he works with brushes, both pointed brushes and flat brushes, and all manner of pens and other tools as well. And he learned all the traditional letter forms, and he's very skilled. But no matter what he does, it looks like him. It is just unmistakably Karl Rohrs. I know right away if a sign or a work of calligraphy was done by Karl Rohrs, or, you know, possibly somebody who studied under him and was influenced by him. It's extremely distinct, has a very strong voice. And I've taken several workshops from Karl Rohrs over the years, but there's one moment from one workshop that I took from him that really stands out in my memory. Karl was demonstrating the difference between classical formal italic calligraphy and a more stylized version of italic that we were learning in class. And he just kind of offhandedly mentioned that the reason that his letters always seem to dance up and down along the baseline, where the letters kind of sit, is because he was never very good at making his letters sit perfectly evenly on that line. And I have some pictures of some of his work in the show notes that you can take a look at, and you can see how his letters just dance. So with Karl, just like with Bob Fosse, there was this gap between his abilities, or at least his perceived abilities, and the canon of, you know, classical, what was sort of expected. So what did he do? Well, instead of beating his head against a wall and trying to get better at making his letters sit perfectly evenly, he took his calligraphy in the opposite direction. He mined the gap. In fact, he actually ditched guidelines. Calligraphers traditionally draw lines and their letters literally sit on a baseline. And he just ditched those guidelines altogether. And he created this really lively style that's completely his own and that has influenced thousands of calligraphers and sign painters who came after him. There are lots of other examples, and I think if you start looking around, you will probably find some. I would love to hear if you have some other juicy examples, because I'm always really intrigued when people take perceived weaknesses and, you know, really mine them and turn them into strengths. Now, this is something that we can do ourselves, and I think that it's often easier to see somebody else's unique style, to really see or hear, metaphorically or literally, their voice than it is to see your own. When I look at my own work, the places where I can see my voice or hear my voice coming through the strongest are very often the places where I have mined my gaps. So a couple of examples, and I have pictures of these examples in the show notes for you to see. On February 1st, 2011, I started making these little calligraphic works of art on paper. I call them art sparks. And I start on a big sheet of paper and kind of make a big mess, finger painting for adults kind of. And then I find interesting places in that big sheet of paper and tear out those interesting places and then respond to what's there by adding some words in calligraphy that I need to hear right in that moment. So I've shared a few of those pieces in the show notes so you can get a sense of some of kind of what they look like and what the style is. And the letters in particular, this is a place where I really mined my gap, because when I started making these little pieces, I knew I wanted to add calligraphy to them, but I really wasn't interested in taking the time to draw guidelines or to try to craft perfect formal letters. I was really impatient. I wanted to crank things out very quickly. And I found it really frustrating to try to make really perfect, formal, calligraphic letters and then have them not come out the way that I wanted. So I went in the other direction and I intentionally allowed my letters to be imperfect. In fact, I kind of exaggerated that quote unquote imperfection by not only allowing the heights to vary, but also the widths of the letters to vary as well, which is a really big no-no in traditional formal styles of calligraphy. And that resulted in a calligraphic hand or lettering style that is very me. It's very unique to me. I've never seen anybody else do this particular hand because I basically developed it by just kind of mining my gaps. Same thing with my latest series of paintings that I call my Dancing with Chaos series, or Less is More series. It's more minimalistic painting rather than layer upon layer. It's basically sort of, there's a lot of white, and I have examples, a few examples in the show notes, and there's a ton of them in my shop, which you can find at shop.melissadinwiddie.com if you want to check out more of my paintings, which will be on sale on Monday. Anyway, with this latest series of paintings, I went even further to reject any attempts at perfection. And because photorealism and representational art is not my interest or my strength, because it's not my interest, I have exploited that gap between my, you know, my ability to draw or create representational photorealistic art and the ideal in that realm. And I've exploited the gap to go in the other direction and explore abstraction. And because I got really burned out after years of doing ketubah art on commission, ketubah is a Jewish marriage contract, and there's links in the show notes if you want to see what some of those look like. My ketubah art was often really nitpicky, really extremely detailed and precise, and very perfectionistic, actually. And with my current art and this series in particular, I have very intentionally gone in the other direction towards speed rather than nitpicky slowness and randomness. And I've made these pieces are, as I said, a lot more minimalist. And I actually use a bamboo skewer as a mark-making tool, which gives me very little control. And that's intentional because I can't control the flow of the ink coming off the tip of the skewer very much. So sometimes it kind of floods out and sometimes it barely comes out at all. And that makes even lines absolutely impossible. And that, so I end up with this very irregular, erratic line quality, which has become a signature, part of my signature style with these paintings, my artistic voice with these paintings. So my invitation to you is to start looking at where you can mine your own gaps. And I want to read a little bit of a quote for you here. This is credited to Martha Graham. It's actually from a book by Agnes DeMille in which she's remembering a conversation with Martha Graham. But according to Agnes DeMille, Martha Graham said, "No artist is pleased," meaning they're never pleased with their work. "There's no satisfaction whatever at any time. There is only a queer divine dissatisfaction, a blessed unrest that keeps us marching and makes us more alive than the others." And you know, I'm always talking about feeling more alive. So this is a piece of it. In other words, what Martha Graham said, whether due to your body shape or your eye-hand coordination or for any other reason, there's almost always a gap between what you want to create, the vision of what you would love to create in your ideal world, and what you're actually capable of creating in reality. Now, this gap tends to get narrower as we increase our skills. It's really wide at the beginning, and it gets narrower as we get better. But if the creative form that you are creating in is a challenging one where you can keep growing forever, that gap is never going to completely go away. Because if you keep growing, it means that, you know, there's always room for you to improve, which means that you're always a little bit away from that, you know, ideal of perfection, right? And for some of us, for a lot of us probably, that leads to a lot of frustration. Gosh, for years, it led to not just frustration, but I mean, I just stopped, a complete shutdown. But I invite you to think about this gap as something that has a positive side. if you let it have a positive side. You can choose to find what's interesting in that gap between what you're capable of doing and what the existing canon condones, or between the idea of your inside your head and what actually comes out. You can choose to find value in those gaps. In other words, your gaps are an entryway to your unique voice. Your gaps are an entryway to your voice. If you investigate your gaps, if you really mind them, you will unearth your voice, and that is a guarantee. So think about that the next time you set out to create anything, and let me know how it goes. And remember, all of this stuff happens over time, too. You're not going to discover your voice in one day. So a little patience helps as well. So that's it. That's a wrap. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope this was helpful. If you are getting value out of this podcast, the best way to thank me is to tell your friends and leave a 5-star rating and review over on iTunes. Those ratings and reviews make a huge difference in how the show is ranked. And that makes a really big difference in helping other people find it. And that helps grow the creative uprising. So you can play an important role in this movement simply by leaving a review and telling your friends. Plus, I would be super duper grateful. Meanwhile, don't forget, sign up on my mailing list in order to get notified of my big sale on Monday, November 30th. You can sign up at livecreativenow.com. Oh, plus I completely forgot. On Tuesday, December 1st, I am holding the very last live Q&A call of 2015. And you can come join me, chat with me live, ask me whatever questions you have about living a full color creative life. All you have to do is go to livecreativenow.com/questions and click on the big green button to register. That's livecreativenow.com/questions. Thanks again for joining me, and until next time, go get creating. Mwah! Live creative now. Live creative now. Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.